Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. Today we discuss searching for meaning in the age of coronavirus with a social worker, Ann Gagan. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning.
And psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz, good morning to you. And psychiatrist Mark Whaley, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mindy.
All right, so Ann, we're going to start with you. This you suggested today's topic, and you do a lot of work in grief counseling. Give us your thoughts on the timeliness of this topic.
Well, I have been living this with all of us. It's the group experience, the worldwide experience of dealing with COVID. And because of the work I do and because of this, you know, the person I am, I've been trying to figure out where we are and where are we going with this COVID. And we've done here on WCAI monthly shows about the different stages of grief and loss. So I was thinking about where we are. It's about 6.5, 7 months that we've been dealing with COVID. And I thought, wow, and when I work with folks, at around the six-month point, people who have lost a loved one get to a reality that the death has really happened, the death is really real, and they start moving a little bit slowly towards, now what do I do? How do I move forward? And it's a long and, you know, grueling process. So I wondered about, are we not, as a people going through the COVID, ready to start imagining life ahead? I think we've been so stuck in the fear and obviously and the uncertainty and the not knowing that we have been paralyzed. But we kind of know what we're doing now a little bit more. We know about the masks. We've got the habit of putting masks on. We've got the habit of washing our hands and socially distancing. We don't like it. It's not fun. But we sort of have a little bit of knowing what to do. So moving towards the future, I think it's maybe time to start wondering about not the meaning of having COVID or having people die of COVID. That just doesn't, we can't make meaning out of that. But how is my response or your response or our culture's response to this worldwide COVID? What is that? What have I learned? What am I changing? What have I noticed? And where am I going with this? And what can I do to make my life going forward, even though I don't know all the factors, more meaningful? And we've seen many, many examples of how groups and people have been reaching out. And so I'm just, it's the idea of taking time to say, how am I in this? How will I go through this? What have I learned? And what can I do to help others? So that was my thought behind wanting to do this. David Kessler has written a wonderful, wonderful book called Finding Meaning, The Sixth Stage of Grief. And so it's a very timely question right now.
Yeah. Anybody else have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think one of the main things, you know, COVID has been so disruptive in our usual life that it has caused us to stop our busyness, which usually dictates our life. We have a narrative all the time in our heads about what we need to do, how we need to set something up for the future to be good for us, to be better, to be happy. That is all put on hold. That mode of being alive and being conscious is just put on hold because there's nothing else to do but other than to, you know, basically survive and be. It really gives us an opportunity to look at our lives in terms of what we want out of life, what life means to us, there's, you know, we curse COVID certainly for its presence, but it really has given us an opportunity to get off a merry-go-round and take stock in our lives. And that's where the notion of meaning comes in, which is something that we don't consciously pay attention to much of the time. Certainly, in terms of grief, it's been called the sixth stage of grief. Kubler-Ross did the first five stages, or delineated those, and they weren't really stages like a map or a roadmap, but they were just aspects of a grief reaction. And the one that's been added to it and makes sense is the sixth stage, and that is finding meaning in your life as it goes forward. Because that's the nature of life is just to go forward. Humans are really unique in having the capacity to have meaning in their life as a kind of a force that drives our behaviors and our goal seeking. Whereas animals, for instance, are really driven by just kind of what we call drive reduction. They're seeking happiness, really. They just want their needs to be met. We do that too, certainly. We also have the capacity to reflect on what life is all about and communicate about it and be together with it. I think that's why we wanted to talk about this topic today, because it's so central to human consciousness, not something that we, examine very frequently. But now, with the COVID, we're no longer distracted by the busyness of everyday life. We just have the day.
Yeah, we've heard lots of people talk about that who said, I've had all this time to sort of reflect and really think about priorities and what's important. And I know I've been having some of those conversations with my friends, and I'm sure you've had those conversations with your patients who all went aha, why? Like I was saying, I have one friend who's like, why am I buying crackers at the store? We're making everything at home, and it's so much better and so much healthier, and because we have the time. And really time to reflect and go, okay, what is important to me, right? So I guess that's the upside to this. But I'm thinking of, Anne, when you talk about grief and the different stages of grief and how we all, try to communicate, this grief there and cope with it. There are, I think about the people who are in denial, right? In some ways, isn't that a coping mechanism? I don't have to deal with this if I deny it's happening.
Oh, that's definitely true, and we do see that demonstrated a great deal, and it's frustrating to see folks who may be denying the whole idea of the COVID, calling it a hoax or whatever, or denying that they have a responsibility to themselves and others regarding the safety of putting on masks and distancing and so on, and it's frustrating, and I think that those who have spent time looking at the greater good and knowing we have to work together may feel that that's irresponsible. But that always happens. It always happens. But sometimes that kind of denial is pierced by reality. And with the way the COVID virus is going, I think sooner or later everyone will be touched directly. And that it tends to change people's perception. And the reality with this looking for meaning and searching for meaning, I really want to stress, is that this does not deny the awful feelings and the tragedy. Folks that are resilient and who are really seeking meaning, absolutely, to a great extent, feel the pain as much, maybe if not more, the collective pain as well as the personal pain. But they also spend time reflecting on, I think Viktor Frankl, who's behind the search for meaning, Man's Search for Meaning, he called it tragic optimism, which allows people to experience all the feelings they have to experience, the tragedy, the pain, the sorrow, and yet move with it and forward into, again, time to reflect on, well, how have I been changed by this? What qualities am I looking at? My fear, my feeling overwhelmed. And then possibly looking for the little glimmers of life. And those studies have shown that people who are resilient have the ability to find the little glimmers of light that, that lead to that tragic optimism, which I think is a great term.
Exactly.
It makes sense because it accepts reality, but adds a sense of movement through it. So I think Jonathan wants to chime in.
No, go ahead, Mark. I'll contribute after.
No, I'm turning it over to Jonathan.
Well, I was going to say that one of the many intriguing aspects of this whole pandemic has been to try to understand why our country has had such a very different experience from other countries. And I don't think it's just as simple as a lack of central federal leadership, although that probably has contributed a lot. I was intrigued by a comment that Viktor Frankl made in which he expressed frustration at the American culture of the search for happiness rather than the search for meaning, and that in the U.S., being happy, just obviously as a gross generalization, seems to be the priority. And he speaks about or writes about happiness being about taking and meaning being about giving. Of course, during this pandemic, it's been difficult to do much of either for a lot of us. Where am I going with this? I guess what I'm thinking about is how we can all learn from this in a way that does provide us and energize a certain kind of optimism for the future, a path toward finding meaning in a way that, although it's not synonymous with happiness, it does lead to feelings of satisfaction and fulfillment. It's interesting to see how many Americans have pushed back against the idea of wearing a mask, have pushed back about the idea of staying at home and not gathering in crowds. When you see young people partying on, you know, lake boats and going to bars, I mean, that's certainly not about giving. It's about having fun. It's about having happiness. And it's about the American idea of not being told what to do, of having independence, of having all of your rights to carry guns and, you know, whatever. I mean, just to be able to do what you want as long as you don't theoretically bother other people. This is about taking. And I think that those of us who are on the panel, we spend a lot of our energy professionally and I think otherwise thinking about and doing what it means to give, mm-hmm. and the satisfaction that comes with giving. So these are some of the things I guess I've been thinking about as I've been rereading Frankl and these other people. And I want to, you know, thank Anne and Mark for reminding me about this literature, which I think is so powerful under the best of circumstances, but certainly at a time like this.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was thinking about that too, looking at that, you know, we have a tendency to kind of confuse meaning and happiness, I think. And, you know, and as you say, in our culture, we read these stories as kids and they lived happily ever after, right? So we're seeking this happiness. And I can remember in my 20s, I had a friend who said to me, "You realize there's no such thing as a happy life, right?" I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "There are happy moments. There is no happy life." And it was just like this reality that came crashing down that, oh my God, he's right. So we're searching for something that doesn't even really exist, right?
But happiness exists, just like you say, but it's an emotion. And emotions are in motion. They don't last. They're momentary. They're an experience that you feel, no doubt about it, and it motivates you to repeat it. That's why drugs, alcohol, et cetera, sex, are, and gambling are all addictive, because you get a real shot of pleasure and happiness. But it's momentary, and that's what the experience of happiness is. Unfortunately, the American society seems to be driven more toward that in terms of how we live our daily lives than we are toward meaning. So we lose sight of how central meaning is to keeping us alive. You know, I think we ought to remind people of Frankl's story. Viktor Frankl was a Jew in Vienna. He was a psychiatrist and a neurologist. He got sent to the camps along with his family. And, of course, he lost, I think, most of his family in the camps. And in the camps, something occurred to him. Actually, it occurred to him earlier in life. He stayed about 3.5 or maybe 4 years in the camps and obviously witnessed horrors. And he became something of a therapist in the camps by talking with his colleagues, if you will. He noticed that the people, he could tell the people who were going to survive versus the people who were going to die in a few days, because the people that were going to survive had a sense of meaning in their life. They had something bigger than themselves to focus upon and to have some kind of reason to go on. It might be what they might do in the future. It might be something creative. It might be religion. It could be anything. Whereas people who gave up their meaning or didn't connect to a meaning, they died. So meaning is a it's a concept, but it's also a road to survival for humans. Because it has been shown to improve things like immune system, resiliency, longer life. So that it is associated with health, if you will, mental health and physical health. At any rate, he finally got out of the camps, and I think in about 9 days, he wrote this book, Man's Search for Meaning, in 1946. Became a bestseller. And it chronicled some of the things he experienced in the camps, but essentially communicated how important and how central this meaning was to seek out and to be conscious of. And again, he coined the phrase tragic optimism as something that you can makes you resilient if you have that attitude, that you you're in tragedy, and hardly anything in human history has been as tragic as the concentration camps. You have that realistic sense of this is absolutely tragic, but you still, the Germans could not take away the final freedom that everybody has, and that is the attitude you take toward your suffering. No matter what your suffering is, you still have a choice about what attitude you take towards it. And that's the central message of meaning. If you lose sense of a connection with meaning, then that you're vulnerable. You're no longer resilient to what you are experiencing. But if you have that sense of this is tragic, but there's still, I remember what we did at the last summer vacation before all this event happened, and we were swimming at the lake, and you know, something like that, where you connect with, in your mind, or maybe in sharing with others too, you connect with a past sense of connection and peace, and when you weren't having this kind of suffering, which he endured for 4 years or so.
You're listening to The Point. We are discussing searching for meaning in the age of coronavirus with social worker Ann Gagan, psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz, and psychiatrist Mark Whaley. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Ann, looked like you wanted to jump in there before we went to the break.
Well, one little... point that about Viktor Frankl that I think is really significant is he had the choice to go to America or stay with his family. Because he was well regarded in his profession, and before he and his family were interned in the camps, and he made the choice to be with his family. And I think that is an extraordinary example of where self-interest versus the interest of others changed his life, and certainly changed his way of looking at life and everything that followed up after that, including his remarkable book. Just wanted to make that. The other thing I wanted to say about I have all kinds of thoughts, but and you know, we have it going back to the idea of why America may be so focused on happiness is we've got it written right from our founding fathers that we have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I think that sort of infiltrates our societal consciousness is like, we should be happy. We have to be happy. Well, come on. And we have advertising and we have TV shows and we have, you know, the whole Disney complex that says we manufacture happiness. And so there's this promise in our culture that promise and expectation that, my God, you should be happy all the time. And if you're not happy, you better get online and find out what the newest lotion or the newest vitamin or the newest workout or the newest philosophy to make you happy. And what is, I think, getting back to you, Mindy, the denial is, well, guess what? Yeah. Life has tragedy. It has loss. It has sorrow, it has suffering. And that too is we can't avoid that. We can't escape that much as we'd like to. So yeah. I think moving towards meaning is the idea of accepting real, and again, the Buddhists have, I think of suffering, accepting that we're gonna have some times where it's just gonna be horrible and it's gonna be painful and it's gonna be difficult. And while we're in that, we have to feel it. While we're in it, we can't go, I think I will search for meaning now. No, you don't do that. When you're in a crisis, you're just trying to survive. But it's after. It's when the dust settles. It's when, I know when I run, and I am running some online grief support groups, the question that emerges is, I knew what I was doing in life. I knew everything about every day I woke up and I knew what I had to do because I had a loved one who was sick and now I am sitting here and my purpose is gone and my meaning is gone. And yet they all want that. Mm-hmm. And that's what the discussion in the groups become about. Well, what is that about? And I think as we move in COVID, it's the same.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm thinking as you're saying this, you know, when, you know, we have these tragedies or things that happen and we're looking and, you know, we have this message, happiness, if you're not happy, what's wrong with you? And you have this sort of thinking like, what's wrong with me, right? I'm all alone here. Nobody understands what I'm going through. Where in this case, where we have this pandemic, there we can relate because we're all going through the same thing. So it's a little bit different now in that we can all relate to what we're all going through. And in a way, we do have that support from one another of, well, you know what? I'm not the only one going through this. Everybody's going through this. And I guess it's the difference in, I think Mark may have mentioned this earlier, in how we react. Sometimes there are things we can't control that happen in our lives, but what we can control is our perception and how we respond to that, right?
Exactly. Okay, exactly. We always have that.
There's nothing wrong with being happy. People listening in might think, you know, what if I would you prefer that I be miserable? Is that sort
no,
of
no, no, no.
The alternative? No, it's not the case at all. And I think it was Anne that made a reference to Buddhists and Buddhism I think what is tricky about happiness is the implicit transience of it, and what the Buddhists talk about and live and write about, at least the Buddhists who aren't militants trying to kill people in Sri Lanka or other places, it is the more sustainable feeling of peace and fulfillment that comes when you stop looking for the next delicious dessert or the next gorgeous item of clothing or the next titillating movie that you might watch, but that you can find, identify, and experience of that which is really a much more sustainable inward peace. And that is, I think, also in my experience, you know, what comes with the giving rather than the taking. That when you're taking, it's a constant need to retake, again, whether it's food or drink or clothing. None of that, all of that is just by definition so transient. And yet when you find meaning in ways of contributing, in ways of giving, in ways of experiencing rather than owning, it's a much more sustainable, much more fulfilling, much more peaceful way to live your life.
Right, rather than seeking all the time. Actually, the Buddhists say that striving for happiness is a prescription for suffering, because you never can get you can get happy for a moment, like we've been saying, but you can never really satisfy happiness as something that a state you can achieve and never leave. It doesn't happen, and instead you get people that are seeking happiness. They're driven by that search, and that's their whole life, is that search for happiness, which is elusive by definition. So enlightenment, according to the Buddhists, come when you give up that merry-go-round, that hamster wheel approach to living.
Yeah. You know, research shows that when people experience disruption in their lives, they seek to find meaning by bonding with others and re-embracing their values. They want to do something. We keep hearing that, right? What can I do? I think we see this. If you look at many of the nonprofits, donations are up. People are, you know, helping out food banks and you know, neighbors. And there is this real sense of people wanting to help in some way, right? Which is, a good thing. But I've actually been surprised at how many people have been stepping up and trying to help in their community in whatever way they can. Anybody else been surprised by the numbers?
It's really heartening. I mean,
it's great.
It's almost like with the restrictions that we have to push harder. We have to go over ourselves, because we can't be running to this, that, and the other thing. And it's more intentional and more conscious, like, well, what can I do? Well, you know, thinking about, oh, gosh, you know, there's that friend that I know is really struggling. And it's not a passing thought. It's like, I call her. You know, I think that the immediacy of what can I do now is a product of this particular COVID, and continue to do that. Certainly the mass movements of the demonstrations and social justice are also a product of what can I do now to change things? What kind of, and trying to imagine a future where we are doing better. I just listened, you know, on the break, there was I think people are beginning to imagine, even on the marketplace, they were talking about the economy reimagined. Hope allows us to imagine. Little actions fill us up so that we can take more actions. And that is, I think there's so many, byproducts of this in my practice. I've been really struck by a couple of amazing things that have happened with my clients. And one person, I have to quote, this person said, I have found with COVID that I have the luxury to stop, look, and listen inside of me.
Yeah.
To assess my life experience. Oh my God. I mean, that right. I mean, that's a direct quote. And
that's a great experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that's another person that I had been working with, because of the isolation, recognized that he really was drinking far too much, mm-hmm. and was incredibly lonely, and drinking was the answer. Woke up to that idea, had someone direct him. He's now on virtual AA meetings. He's sober, and he is got community. He's got a philosophy he never had, the beautiful AA philosophy, and he's got a change of lifestyle. These little things are happening all over the place. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not to minimize what we're doing. Please, I would never want that. But I think there are, on a micro level and on a macro level, changes happening because we have to change.
Yeah, I have a story that a colleague related to me, a psychiatrist, that illustrates exactly what you're saying as well. He's been working with a patient for a number of years who has had a horrible, horrible deep depression since he lost a young son, elementary school age child, a number of years ago, 15 to 20 years ago. After a number of years, he did find some solace in religion and studying the scripture and going to church, going to services and being involved in the church. However, his depression was also connected with aspects of social anxiety. So he became too anxious in any social situation like the church was. So he had to stop. Because it was just too painful because of the anxiety he experienced, even though he got a good deal of peace from it and connection from it. And then comes along COVID. Now this man has reestablished that sense of peace through Zoom, by attending services through Zoom. He doesn't have the social anxiety because he's not present with people. He's not, you know, the stimulus of people doesn't trigger his social anxiety, so he can get back to what he found so meaningful that was not an antidote, but it helped him be resilient with the loss of a child. So there's a one story in brief that illustrates the importance of what we're talking about.
Listening to The Point, we are discussing searching for meaning in the age of coronavirus with social worker Ann Gagan, psychiatrist Jonathan Schwartz, and psychiatrist Mark Whaley. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. I'm just thinking about, people sometimes think they know what their meaning or their purpose is, and that changes. And, I'm thinking like a super athlete, right? You've worked your whole life to get here. Maybe it's the Olympics, maybe it's the Super Bowl, whatever. And then you have an injury and everything you've worked for your entire life changes. I think, Anne, you had sent a link to one of the Hidden Brain shows with Maya, who was a violinist and amazing, talented young lady, and she hurts her hand, but she finds a passion somewhere else and new meaning. So I guess as people are in this pandemic and thinking whatever may have changed their lives doesn't mean that they can't find new meaning, right?
Well, you mentioned Olympic athletes. There's actually now quite a new or growing literature on the difficulty that Olympic athletes face after they're no longer able to continue pursuing their sport at that level. And it's certainly, I suppose, more intense in certain sports than others. But, I mean, it's a whole industry of mental health care for high-level athletes who now are no longer able to continue with that identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's like, who am I now, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the same or similar to what people face when they retire. especially if they've had a profession that they've been involved in all their working life, all their adult life.
It's a lot easier for most of us who have never been really great at anything. We don't have to worry about that.
That's right. Yeah, mediocrity has its benefits.
So I guess some thoughts on as guidelines when we're looking at meaning, and one that I don't know if it was Ann or Mark that sent, focus on concrete actions, not just good intentions. So what are some thoughts as people are going, okay, I'm searching for meaning. How do I do that? How do I find that?
Well, it's whatever makes sense to you in your particular circumstances. It might be if you have the resources, you write a check to some organization that's doing hands-on work, or you do some hands-on work yourself in your neighborhood, helping with grocery shopping or something along those lines, giving rides when necessary, getting involved with what's going on in local organizations, whether they be religious or anything. But it's really just kind of getting out of yourself. And you can get out by using Zoom. I had been connected with my some friends from college years ago, more than 50 years ago. We've been having Zoom meetings, and they've been very satisfying. Because I look at those people and they have me as a young man, young boy, in their memories as that's who I am. And we've changed over these years, obviously, but it's so enjoyable and fulfilling to kind of just chat again. So that's. You know, another thing that you can do, you can get in meaning. When you have a sense of meaning, you have a focus not just on the present. The search for happiness requires a search a narrow, blinded vision of just the present, because you're trying to get that shot of dopamine in your brain. Meaning, however, is you're connected to the past. You're connected to the future, you're connected to the present, and you just kind of flow among those realms as opposed to being owned by one realm or another. It really is an antidote for mental illness, if you can look at it from that standpoint.
You can always trust Mark to bring it back to the neurotransmitters.
Yeah. Where it all begins and ends. I like what David Kessler, I listened to a podcast with David Kessler and Brené Brown, and they talked, they said, we're always running around busy chasing extraordinary moments. And I think that's where we were with, like, who can have the most amazing, amazing moments? And they said, you know what, we have to downshift to looking for the meaningful moments, those little small, hopefully, like, this is meaningful for me to do this with all of you. That was meaningful. Yeah. And really look for them and really notice them and say, gosh, I think the key is, I always talk to my clients, did you get some satisfaction? Were you really satisfied by that conversation, that walk, that phone call? Did it satisfy you versus, oh, now I've got to do this? I think that's a good measure to say where satisfaction, you know when it's good, you know when it's meaningful, and to pay attention to that, not the excitement so much, but the satisfaction. That's, I think, a good measure.
Let's talk to Paula, who's giving us a call from Woods Hole. Hi, Paula.
Hi. I have sort of a different take on happiness. I mean, I don't see it as a polar opposite to meaning. I think there's a deep happiness that that's not the superficial searching for it through drugs or whatever, but it's a sense of acceptance of what we can't change, but it's a spirit, and I think it actually enhances meaning. Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
There's a big overlap, no doubt about it. But it just depends on, I guess we're talking about the extreme emphasis on one, on happiness as opposed to the other, and not embracing the aspects of meaning the other, and kind of, you know, you're missing out on a lot of humanity when you do that. You know, life is an amazing thing when you really think about it. I mean, why is it happening? Well, why does it exist? We won't know that. I don't know if anybody can ever know that, but we can learn a lot, at least the way I look at it, we can learn a lot about why or how it exists. And that is a level of knowledge that is an avenue, at least, to knowing at least next to why it exists. But it's awe-inspiring, I consider that a religious kind of experience.
Go ahead, Paula.
And I think that awesomeness is an aspect of happiness. So I just didn't want the dichotomy. I think there are different kinds of happiness, and it felt as though that the happiness was being put down.
Yes, Paula.
Spirit,
right. Thank you for sharing, Paula. Because absolutely, we're not putting down happiness. We want people to be happy. And I think we're talking about some of these, as Anne was saying, these meaningful moments bring us happiness, right? So Thank you, Paula, for the call.
Viktor Frankl, I think, says it again beautifully. He says, "Happiness can't be pursued; it must ensue. One must have a reason to be happy." I think it's the flip. Of course, we want to be happy. That well-being is wonderful, but it's not happiness like for its own sake. It's usually we feel happy after we have done something or experienced something that happiness comes to us. It ensues. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a beautiful way of putting it. And that's Viktor Frankl.
There's another aspect of this that we're not addressing. Some people are so, by necessity, focused on survival. The poor, the people that are poor, and or extruded, or on they're part of marginal groups, or that society makes marginal. They have a tough time with just daily life, and no wonder, you know, say addictions are more prevalent there, because they have a kind of a low-grade depression day in and day out because of the odds that they face, it's hard for them to stop and really look at themselves and have meaning. That's a bigger challenge. I think we have to appreciate that because we're professionals and we know we're going to meet, eat our three meals and not have to be out in the cold. It's a whole different perspective on life than what many people have. So if you talk about meaning coming from the acts of giving, there's plenty of opportunities for it, no doubt about it. I guess that's what Christ taught too. Plenty of opportunities to give to the poor.
Yeah. Donna writes, "One of the things I've noticed in those who are already grieving a loved one, especially a spouse, really struggled with loneliness during the COVID shutdown. Could the woman who was running the online grief support group share her contact info? I run a local faith-based grief support group that has been on hold due to COVID, but I'm hoping to try a Zoom group and have some questions I'd like to ask her. Personally, I've used the time to develop a mindfulness and a contemplative practice, which would likely not have happened if I wasn't forced to be alone with my thoughts." And I will send you Donna's email.
That sounds great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
One of the things I'm thinking here, and going back to Mark, where we talked about sometimes we can't control what happens, but we can control our perceptions and how we respond to it. And I've sort of been thinking in my own mind, I've been I've been feeling really badly for young people, especially, you know, the teenagers, the peers, they're everything, and they can't be together. And I'm thinking of all the experiences that they're missing out on. And then at the same time, I'm being so thankful that I've had some of these experiences. And I'm, and you know, I don't know how other people think about that, but I think, wow, I'm so lucky I was able to do X, Y, and Z. And that uncertainty as we look forward, you know, to the like the kids who are seniors in high school, their senior year is going to be very different than any senior in the past. And what's beyond that? What's our new future? And I think a lot of this uncertainty, of course, is creating a lot of the anxiety that we're talking about and the grief of the life that was and what will be. So, I mean, we're really kind of dealing with a lot. And I think for some people, it's really hard to have that sort of maybe gratitude. It's like, oh no, I can't do this and I'm not able to do that, instead of focusing on maybe some of the experiences we were lucky to have, right?
Sure. Yeah, exactly. That's kind of connecting with meaning. And you can foul it up like our human minds do and feeling guilty that you have it in, or you had it in the present generation is not getting it.
I don't feel guilty. I just feel bad for them.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. Good. there's mental health speaking up. Yes, things are really different. You know, I thought that life was going to be never the same after 2001, you know, the 9/11 experience. And it certainly wasn't. It was different in many ways, but nothing like this difference. Mm-hmm. This is an incredible upheaval. Now, you know, we'll get through it, because human beings have. They've gotten through disease, pestilence, floods, whatever. They have survived, and that's one thing about humans. They really are basically very resilient and adaptive creatures. My mother used to say, you get used to hanging if you hang long enough. And that was her way of putting, you know, you get through things. You know, she was an immigrant Russian Jew from Russia when she was young. And they left because of the pogroms. She knew what she was talking about. The challenge of change is a basic task for us all to accept that being alive involves. Life involves change and adapting to it, adapting the best way you can. And Frankl's message is you do have some choice in the attitude you take toward how you adapt to the change.
All right. And we will leave it there. Psychiatrist Mark Whaley, psychiatrist Jonathan Swartz, and social worker Ann Gagan, thank you all for being with us and sharing your expertise. We appreciate it, as always.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.